From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by sharing the stories of entrepreneurs. And the show really was started so that if you heard a story about somebody who was successful, it might inspire you to take a leap of faith and maybe try entrepreneurship or maybe try to grow your business a little bit more. And today on the show, we have Melissa Ortiz. So today we are going to be inspired, but you're also going to be educated. So she is an entrepreneur. She also helps other entrepreneurs, and we're going to get to know her because she is delightful. She is energetic, and I don't know how she has as much energy as she does, but we'll see if she can match my energy today.
That's a serious on the show. Challenge, man.
Melissa, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's just get to know you a little bit. So maybe just an overview of the business, and then maybe we'll go, I'll probably just jump around on this because this is going to be fun.
Okay, great. So in a nutshell, I help people do better at their jobs.
Okay. And do better at the jobs. They don't have to be an entrepreneur. They could be somebody working for big business, small business, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, the idea is that we all have these superhighways in our brains, our natural talents. And if I try to travel on your superhighways, it's going to feel like a gravel road because my brain didn't develop the way yours did.
Yeah, trust me. You don't want to try to drive it's on messy. My... I wouldn't even call it an interstate. You know, it's not even any kind of highway.
Yeah. But it's interesting because by the time we're about 15 years old, those superhighways are developed.
Okay.
And our job as we mature and gain professional maturity and sophistication is to find those highways and use them. Instead of trying to emulate people around us who are really good, we have to find our own path to success. And I think that's maybe the most beautiful thing about entrepreneurship is it's these people who often have tried in the normal structure of the workplace and been like, I can't do this. This is too constraining. This is too whatever. And they exit stage left and go try something else.
And they find their highway of best flow or
and
what have you.
Turns out we can do that within the workplace too. And often there are employers who are excited about that. And so helping the right people find the right seats in the organization that are using their talents, make sure they're engaged in their work and that we keep them and keep helping them perform at higher levels. Because I think the thing that you probably, it would resonate most with you about the work that I do and that certainly resonates most with me is when we get those conditions right, it turns out employees can perform at higher levels. We as entrepreneurs can perform at higher levels, but oh, by the way, we go home after doing better work during the day for our teammates, for our internal, external clients, we go home with more energy for our family, for our faith, for our physical well-being, for our community, whatever is important to us, there's gas in the tank left. But if I'm in the wrong seat, if I am working for a bad manager, if my job is draining the ever-loving life out of me, what do? We come home, I crack a beer, I chill out, and I've got nothing left for anybody, including myself. And so that's huge for me.
Interesting. Well, I have this, I'm wearing my shirt today, everything is figure outable. And I feel I'm like if I'm an employee and I'm not quite satisfied with the direction that my job is taking me, I want to tell you everything is figure outable. If you, regardless of what you want, if you have enough imagination and enough inspired action and enough stick-to-itiveness, you can figure out anything you want to do within an organization, or maybe it's something outside the organization, but you can figure it out. And I think it's incumbent on us as, let's call it the leaders of the business, or maybe the managers or the founders, if you will, the owners, to listen to what our employees want in their lives so that we can help open up some of those doors, or maybe apply some extra imagination to the to the challenge.
Yeah, I call that owning your own engagement because I think too many people decide things aren't figure outable, and so they're stuck, and they need to be stuck because they're supporting their families or their elderly parents, or these people are depending on them, and I can't figure it out because it will jeopardize this stability. And all that does is drain their life force, and it breaks my heart because there's too much. One of my core values is I hate waste. I hate wasted time, energy, talent, enthusiasm, money, especially. But when you decide in your brain things aren't figure outable and you're stuck, there's nothing more heartbreaking. And so we have to take ownership individually. And as leaders, we need to encourage people to be like, okay, what is it? Where are you at? Where do you want to be?
We do. And so if you're, let's put just get inside the this employee's head at this stage. I'm working in an organization. I feel unheard. I feel unnoticed. I don't see opportunities. I'm starting to lose desire because of just where I'm at. But I'm, you know, I'm maybe procrastinating on the couch with a beer instead of dealing with it. What's the first step? Is it talking, you know, communicating with somebody in the organization what matters to you and what you'd like to see for yourself?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe it's something in your personal life that at least gives you a little extra juice to then go back to work and start looking around, because if we can't find opportunities to do better at work, I'll be shocked. Because what I find in the employee engagement space is often the most disengaged employees have the best ideas. They are just terrible at communicating those ideas. They are frustrated and they vent and they complain instead of bringing a couple workable solutions to the table and be like, I'm frustrated and I'm going to do something about it. And here are my four ideas.
Yeah.
And when you bring it to the table that way, and it's partially our ability to listen as leaders, like, what are they really saying here? But it's also our responsibility as employees to own our own engagement and say, I'm frustrated. Here's what I think is broken. And sometimes the owners or managers aren't willing to fix it. And sometimes that's your turn to exit stage left.
Yeah.
But try.
Yeah. No, I like how you began your step with not necessarily, because if you are really, if you have a victim mindset and you can't get your head right, and that might happen at home, right? So what do you need to do, potentially cut out of your life so that you have enough time to be a little bit solution oriented on how you're at least going to start the conversation with your supervisor or with the owner of the company? You need to carve out a little bit of time for yourself to develop a workable plan, workable vision for where you want to take that conversation. And you got to cut out, maybe, you know, you got to put the bad, get some of the bad stuff out of your life and put in some downtime for yourself.
Stuff and or people.
Mm.
So often we surround the people that I see in victim mentality, they've surround themselves with willing listeners and people they can commiserate with. And if you start to separate yourself from that and make space for people who are the doers and like, oh, that's a good idea, you should go do that, all of a sudden there feels like a path forward. And so whether it's activities, you know, we've so many people just get sucked into this social media chamber and they just, then time just disappears.
Right.
Instead of going for a bike ride, going for a walk, doing something to physically get an outlet, because so much of our good thinking comes when we're not working.
Well, it's amazing on social media, because when you scroll through, chances are you're going to see kind of a combat zone, is the only way I can think to say it at the moment, is like there is people tearing down one side and tearing down the other. There's a lot of criticism depending on what channel you follow, but the main media, it's pretty negative. And so it can make you want to just poke holes at the other side, or you know, kind of get yourself in the mode of blaming others for where you're at. And really, my wife and I love Chris Stapleton, and he's got this song, I Got Nobody to Blame But Me.
It's
and
a great
I really
song.
Have lived by that. My parents beat the victim out of me when I was a kid. Don't hit your kids. But they just didn't let us be that way. So for whatever reason, my mind has never clicked over that way. So I don't ever find myself with that tendency to, I look at myself first. It's just like something I learned as a child. But
I can literally pinpoint the lecture where that was beat into me.
And oh, really?
The chair that
what
I was
happened?
Sitting in.
Oh, goodness.
It was something about a softball game, and I was mad at a ref or something. My dad just railed on me. It must have been 45 minutes that I sat there and took it about everything's your fault, everything you are responsible for. And I'm like, that's a little extreme, but I get the message. And so I feel the same way. Yeah. I have nobody to blame for me but me for everything. Good, bad, indifferent, mostly
what,
bad.
What is your dad like? What's your dad? I mean, is he, he sounds like he's, is he old school type mentality?
Super old school.
Yeah.
My favorite story about him is my kids, his rule at home growing up was all the horsepower, no horses. So if you have to feed it, we don't need it. But it was like go-karts, four-wheelers. I grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. He flew airplanes and helicopter and race cars for fun, and so there was a lot of horsepower around.
Wow.
In addition to the tractors,
man's man type guy.
And so my favorite story is my kids are out, we live on the Sacramento River, up in Colusa, and my kids are out with him and they're riding side by sides. And my dad is having a ball. He's 72 at this point, I think. And he's spinning donuts in the gravel and just having a great time. And pretty soon my kids are screaming, "Papa, you're on fire." And he's like, "I know." And they're like, "No, no, you're on fire."
Oh my gosh.
This goes on two or three rounds. And finally he realized that the side by side that he's driving is on fire and he drives it into the river.
Oh my gosh.
Fire out.
Oh, and it started the fire from all the different donuts and stuff he was doing got too hot?
I don't know. I wasn't there. But this is like the best quintessential story. God. I mean, he didn't quit racing amateur SCCA, Sports Car Club of America cars until he was 73. Still flies fixed wing and helicopter. He's just on fire. He loves what he does. He's a farmer. He's really damn good at it. Yeah. And he's super intense, super competitive, and there's just no room for excuses in his world.
Wow. I love that approach to life. No excuses. Play hard. Like work hard, play hard guy.
Yeah. It's like the quote I think that makes me think of him is, "Don't tell your kids how to live. Let them watch you do it and learn that way." I'm like, so cool. Yep, check that box.
Well, and I'm deviating from the employee thing a little bit because I do think that our value systems, they begin at home. I know that they can change later in life, but if we do a good job as parents, I think it's more easy to... when you're older, if you find yourself being a victim, to change back to the way dad used to
be. Like you have a solid footing.
Yeah, you do. So even though virtually everybody might act like a victim occasionally or blame a ref occasionally, but you know, we can always revert back to, you know, the principles that your dad taught you. And of course I had some similar stuff, but knowing this, okay, so you and I have some things in common. So I had the same, sounds like a lot of the same values taught to me as parent as I had when I was a kid. But you live near your parents today and you guys are talking about maybe building homes on each other's property. Would that be you build a home on your parents' property?
So they actually gifted us 40 acres, which was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
And we're building. We're
so they're generous. So, okay, that's cool.
You work for it.
Yeah.
There's no free ride, but right. Yeah, they've been extremely, we moved back from Texas. My husband and I both built businesses there. We finished school at Texas A&M. And when I got pregnant with the second baby, I looked at my husband and I said, "You knew this was coming. I want to go home.
I need my mom and dad."
It's like this family core that if you see them on, you know, holidays, it's very different than this. My mom calls it kid taxi. She'll show up for 4 minutes for breakfast, whisk the kids off, and they get these little tiny interactions to see their values at work.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother.
Is your brother here?
Yeah, he's full-time on the farm.
Okay, so he lives out there with your mom and dad now, and then you've moved back near, and you're going to build on your 40... How many acres is the whole thing?
About 3,500 acres we farm.
Oh my goodness.
And it's 15 different crops spread over a 20-mile radius, and it's guys and equipment and nonstop.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so is it kind of like a family business then? Yeah. Your dad obviously sounds like he's the initiator of this whole thing. Does your brother work in the business?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he and I are fifth generation on the ranch. My dad's fourth generation. And my brother has more stamina than I do. There wasn't a right seat for me, so I love the people business. And
what's the name of the company? What is it?
River Vista Farms.
River Vista Farms. And is it is that brand available out? You sell just wholesale or is it available? Yeah.
It's not a consumer brand.
Okay, it's not a consumer brand.
So it's all commodity agriculture. Okay. And then we also have a fruit drying facility that has a consumer brand attached to it. It's called Sunrise Fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the largest dried cherry brand. On Amazon is probably the best place to find them. They're amazing. They don't have any additives. We dry about 10 million pounds of cherries a year.
Okay, so what's the name of that brand again?
Sunrise Fresh.
Sunrise Fresh. Yeah. You can buy local dried cherries?
Dried cherries, blueberries, apples, I think some strawberries.
Wow, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
So I have seven grandkids, two kids and seven grandkids, and we all live on 74 acres, a lot smaller, but... you mentioned the, you know, 2 minute away thing. So my little granddaughter, one of the granddaughters is almost three, but for the last 6 months, she's been walking from my son's house. We're probably 500 yards away.
Just show up.
And she's just like, she's on our back patio. It's like, hey, how you doing, Brindley? Yeah. And I just wanted to come see what was going on. How's your day? And I'm like, come on in, you know. Does your mom know you're here?
The freedom of country kids, you just can't, it's incomparable.
Yeah.
And that ability to just go and have the confidence to just go at that age. And
well, you have daughters, right?
One of each. I have an 11-year-old girl and a 9-year-old boy.
Have they, now you're not living on the property yet, but it sounds like there's a lot of great interaction between your family members. Is there like people, your dad or, you know, the grandmother or their grandfather, is there one that the kids are more like drawn to, the dad or your mom?
I mean, my mom's the most approachable. She's so fun. She's so engaging. My dad's doing his own thing. He's busy. If you want to hop in the truck with him, great. Yeah. If you want to go golfing with him, great. But he's doing his thing.
Okay.
And so my mom's probably the most approachable.
Mom's kind of a confidant, maybe.
Maybe.
I've seen
or
that.
Or co-conspirator. She's pretty fun.
So that sounds a little bit like my wife. I don't know, co-conspirator. I've never really thought of that term, but I'll come over. Like, one of the grandkids is going into freshman in high school. And so you can imagine, you know, she's kind of popular, but there's girl drama and boyfriend drama and all that. And so I get, because I'm probably less approachable, but I'm tight with my wife and I'm always around. I get to hear all the, you know, what it's like to be 14 years old. And
I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. But I say that as being, I think it's like, it's the thing that I never knew that, you know, like what we're describing, what it would be like or how it might exist until you're living it. And I can tell you, I love it. And anybody listening, I mean, it can be great. So
my mom did this great thing with my husband, because he doesn't come from a family business or have everybody intertwined. And she said, we got married in 2011, and he needed to go to some meeting in Fresno or Bakersfield or somewhere. And she says, you can use my new Porsche to go on this trip. And in exchange, you're going to give me 3 years of you can't talk trash about me as your mother-in-law at all. And he's like, deal. I'll take that deal.
So she drove his car.
He drove her car.
Oh, he drove her car. It's her Porsche. Oh, God. Okay, got it. It's her Porsche. Okay.
He's like, okay, deal.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty.
Yeah, it sounds like she's got a good sense of humor and a good, way about living life. So that's awesome.
She's amazing. It's if we come back to my daughter for a second, I think one of the most professionally rewarding things that has happened to me this year by far is I've worked with the Gallup StrengthsFinder is one of the tools that I use with clients. And my daughter says to me, 11 years old, she says to me on a Sunday, Mom, can I find out what my strengths are? And I was like, girlfriend, I have been waiting for years for you to ask me this.
I'm going to get a tear.
It was awesome. And I was like, of course. And so their Gallup has a tool for younger children called the Strengths Explorer. And so we got her the code and we sat her down at the laptop and she went through the assessment. Then we printed her report and we went through it with a highlighter and made notes. And it was like, the coolest parenting moment, because she knows what I do for work. Mm-hmm. She's interested. And of course, everybody's interested in what makes them special and fantastic and want to do more of that.
Kids get asked all the time, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You want to do what your mom's doing? You want to do what grandpa's doing? You know, that type of thing. And are they starting to imagine what their, adulthood might look like?
I don't think so. Like,
they don't know what they want to be when they're
just present in their little lives. And I'm on the school board in Colusa. And one of the stats when I first started, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, was the kids that we have in school right now, half of the jobs they will have don't even exist yet.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So we can't prepare them for careers. We have to prepare them as learners to understand who they are and what they bring to the world and how they take in information more than anything. And so I probably having inherently discouraged, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because I think it's a bogus question in general. What do you want to do? You don't know. None of us know. We're still making it up on the fly.
Yeah.
So
a lot of times kids will look at, like my daughter is in real estate. And I remember when my granddaughter was about 11, she would say things like, I want to be a realtor like my mom or that type of thing.
I want to be a garbage man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a ridiculous aspiration for a little girl, but that was what
That job might still exist. I don't know.
It does.
I mean, it's gotten a little bit robotic.
My kids still get excited on Thursday morning when the garbage man comes through the alley.
Yes. And like, oh. Well, my dad, really respected our garbage man because they were friends when, you know, growing up, our garbage man. So we were growing up to respect the garbage man, yeah. And because of a guy named Frank Cervani. So it is kind of a interesting thing to think about what jobs are going to go away first. And I would imagine in your line of work, you're seeing this begin to change right before our very eyes. We can see, you know, 15,000 layoffs at Microsoft. We see all kinds of jobs that are now AI enabled. And, you know, if you're not engaged and understand the job, the mundane jobs, the monotonous jobs, most of those are going to go away.
And most of those suck anyway.
Yeah. So, right? So aspire to be a driver of something.
Yeah. And so how do we, as individuals, both business owners and employees, how do we keep leveling up? How do we look around and figure out how we kind of stay on top of that shifting sand that's beneath us? And it's pretty daunting. I mean, in my EO group, there was a guy the other day who's super whiz kid on AI, and he was kind of schooling our group, and I went, I'm a moron compared to this guy. I have so much to learn. And it was in a deflating way. It wasn't mm-hmm. empowering. It was just like, I think I'm so far behind already. And then the reality is, you know, that even if you're using it at any capacity, you're ahead of some of the people. And so we have to find some foothold. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. But 25% of today's job openings require some AI experience. That's an amazing stat. And we're not even in the, I mean, we're still in the first inning, if even that, in this AI thing. Because what we do is we invest into startups, and virtually all of them have got an AI component of some sort running through it. We just announced the exit of one of our robotics companies, and it was AI driven. But basically, it replaced the people that walk around and monitor solar farms, right? These gigantic solar farms. It's been very labor intensive. So these robots go out there and make sure everything's running right, write the reports, and do it all. And it's all driven digitally, and it eliminates, it makes things better, but you just don't need people doing those boring jobs of walking around or driving, 500 miles into the country to find, go check out the solar panel.
Yeah.
So it's good. But that kind of thing's changing. Do you, in talking to employees and employers, are people fearful of this kind of thing? It's like, I'm getting, my job's going to get eliminated.
Some are, and yeah. Some are excited. It's never been a better time to be a learner, because you don't need a fancy college to learn things. Learning has never been more accessible. And it is fascinating for me to think about the kids in school today, and will a college education, aside from like a medical doctor, a professional engineer, some of these roles really do require this specific training, but so many of them just require you to be a really good learner. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of amazing to know there are all these avenues and all these experts that are willing to share for little to no money. And that's pretty exciting.
It is.
I think if we're willing to take ownership of it. And I have some questions about our society and our motivation to keep up.
Yeah.
But the ones that are, I think, will be just fine.
I think so. And I think there's, at one point I had sold my companies and was trying to decide, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to wait for my non-competes to go away and kind of get back in the same space? And I did an exercise called an Ikigai. Have you heard of that exercise before?
Yes.
Yeah. So for our listeners, it's a Japanese term that kind of means something like finding your calling. And it's the intersection between four things: what you're good at, what you love, what the world needs, and how can you make money doing it? How can it be financially sustainable? And I did it in the form of like almost like a brainstorming session. I got a big dry erase board and just started throwing ideas against the wall and was looking for commonality around, you know, what that meant in terms of finding my calling. And I decided at that point, it was really around, I enjoyed creating opportunity for people. That's kind of like what I've been working on for the last 10, 12 years. And it really acts as a North Star. Even though I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, I knew I liked creating opportunity, and I could figure out a way to make some money doing that and, you know, have some fun doing it.
Yeah, I've got like three pillars that I've kind of come to the same conclusion. So I've got kids, so school board, swim team, all this stuff that I'm involved in. And then there's entrepreneurship, A girlfriend of mine and I taught an entrepreneurship kid for kids class in summer school this summer.
Wow.
So then that covers two of the buckets. Neither of those unfortunately make any money. And then my other pillar is strengths and engagement. How do we leverage people's strengths, figure out how to engage them for the benefit of the individual and the organization? And so they all are the
I see them intersecting, though, even though maybe school board doesn't pay any money. You are helping develop strengths. And same with the swim team and
Absolutely.
So on. So there's
a lot. I have clients that are school districts that are not the district that I volunteer for, so that I have lots of insight into that space. But it's just like, I think that's kind of my... those pillars that you're talking about. But it's a great experience. And I would definitely recommend, if you're going to go down that path, find somebody who knows you really well, because we all do this thing to ourselves. We're like, well, what am I good at? Well, everybody's good at that. Everybody's good at that. And to have an external person who knows you say, no, I don't think you understand. You're really, really good at this.
You think it's weird, but that weird part of you, that's, there's something there.
That's, yeah, that's where the value
that
is.
That thing you're kind of like obsessive about, you know, that might be something.
Yeah. So I think that separate set of eyes to push you to acknowledge some of the great things about yourself. We all just, it's why it's hard to write your own resume. Mm-hmm. I do quite a few executive resumes every year because they don't know how to tout their own expertise. They're like, well, I'm really good at this. I'm like, oh, you're like industry expert level. You need to make sure that's clear and that your metrics in your resume indicate that. And so...
yeah. A lot of times we don't necessarily see that in ourselves. So when you want to find somebody like that, somebody who knows you well, but don't you think it needs to be somebody who will give you candid feedback? Yeah. Like somebody who knows you well, but it's not going to be a yes, ma'am, or a no.
And hopefully you have those friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Because not everybody does, but someone who can be, and giving them a permission slip to be just brutally honest with you. Like, I'm trying to make some major life decisions here, or direction. Can you just call it like you see it.
Who would you go to for you? Like, say you had one of those big things. Would you go to your mom or dad? Would you go to your husband?
No,
I have your children.
A really good friend named Sadie. She and I have worked on 100 nonprofit projects together. We've been friends since we were knee high to a grasshopper, and she and I are really comfortable shooting each other straight, and we've worked together professionally and personally. So she sees this well-rounded picture that think about our lives. So few people in our lives see personal and professional. That's probably my favorite thing about living in a small town is the doers are all the things. They're on the boards. They're doing the work, and you get this overlap.
Well, that's the one thing we talked about. You know, I'm kind of bouncing around on this conversation, but touching off this, you're in the entrepreneurs organization. You started an EO chapter in Texas, right?
Yeah, in College Station. I was a founding member.
So I thought I was kind of into EO. I've been a member since 2012. And the entrepreneurs organization, for somebody who may not know, it's a group of entrepreneurs. It's like a club. I call it AA for entrepreneurs. It's where we share everything with other entrepreneurs. And it's, you know, maybe your deepest, darkest secrets about, you know, the personal life or the family stuff or the business stuff. And then you can use that, these people, as a sounding board in many cases. And they want to help you.
But it's a sounding board who gets it. They're living the same life. If you're trying to talk to a friend of yours who's a W-2 wage earner and has great benefits, they have no idea the struggles that you're facing. Mm-hmm. And I love the way I describe the entrepreneurs organization is like swimming in the deep end with people. Mm. If you only like to swim on the surface, it's probably not a really good fit for you, because the deep end is where the meat is at, and where we learn from each other and learn from each other's mistakes.
And when you say swimming near the deep end, you're saying, I'm rephrasing this to make sure I understand. You're saying, talk about the stuff that may be a little scary to talk about.
Or even stuff that feels like bragging outside this circle. Okay. It's both.
Yeah, when you're talking about selling your business for a lot of money, but you don't know how you're going to do the transaction, and you know somebody else in your forum maybe has sold 10 businesses, that's a great sounding board, but they don't think you're bragging. They think you,
they want to dive into the media where somebody else
might help you.
But even like, an embezzlement situation or terrible things that happen, you don't even feel like maybe you can talk to your spouse about because you're petrified to let them know.
Yeah.
These are these foundational groups that get you, see you, and have this freedom to challenge you, challenge your thinking. So those, that sounding board, if you go through the Ikagi? I don't know how to say it right.
Oh, yeah. They have a... the Ikigai.
If you go through that process, those are some great people because they've seen the ups and the downs, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the EO organization has been great for me. I mean, it really led me to the idea of starting a podcast. It led me to now I invest into startups, and it's like all these ideas started by I joined this group of entrepreneurs and met a couple of venture capitalists and a couple of, you know, other people that were doing cool stuff for entrepreneurs. I'm like, what can I do?
Well, this sounds like a really fun sandbox.
Yeah, I'll start a show. That'll be my thing. And it led me to where I'm at today. So we highly recommend the Entrepreneurs Organization for I would say, growth-oriented entrepreneurs, mainly because it really is, it's a place where you can go and not stay the same. And I think it will help you grow if you embrace it. Yeah. So you were teaching entrepreneurship with the kids. I often describe the importance of entrepreneurship, but as you're describing entrepreneurship to young children, did you talk about like why be an entrepreneur or why it's the importance of being an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I mean, I love the quote that you have downstairs about like, these are the superheroes of our economy. This is what's going to save America is people who try new things and take a different approach. And so we talked a lot about that. We talked about my husband when we were pitching it to the school district said, you need to call it small business class. I'm like, no, thank you. Academic language is important and setting expectations is important. I don't need you to own a bookshop on the corner. I want you to think bigger. And whether you end up with a bookshop on the corner because that's your heart's desire, great. But setting that expectations, kids can't be what they can't see. Mm-hmm. And if they both, my friend Sadie and I have owned businesses, and so we're both entrepreneurs, and we're coming from this place of like, I've done it well, I've done it poorly. We've learned so many lessons, but even just this academic language of like the difference between revenue and income. Mm-hmm. they got it. They totally got it. They got the concept. One of the kids wanted to have a banana split business and he said he was going to sell full banana splits. But, you know, like a lot of times moms, they don't want a whole banana split. So he was going to sell half a banana split for better profit margins. And we're like, you've got this. You're going to be fine, kid.
That's awesome. Well, it's interesting because the older we get, I think there's something about reaching young people. We work with a lot of students in entrepreneurship in the Growth Factory. And there's something about getting into the minds of young people and helping them to, I guess, think bigger, think different, think it's okay. Because a lot of times we see what our parents do and we sort of go down that path. I'm on an advisory board for a local university, advisory board for entrepreneurship. And there's a lot of faculty at this certain state college. And the faculty don't really embrace the word entrepreneurship like the people that run in most of our circles. I don't know if it's a scary word or if it's a word that...
they don't know how to spell?
Yeah. Well, who does, right? I learned how to spell entrepreneurship. But it's sort of, you know, for the people that are working for a government agency, but helping develop our young people, not being in love with the word entrepreneurship, almost like it's... I don't want to say adversarial, but the group really embraced the word innovation more than entrepreneurial, right? So I think that thinking about the people that maybe are working for a government agency or working in maybe a large company or something like that, I think you brought up the word entrepreneurial. Yeah. That gets thrown around a lot, but really embracing the way of thinking innovatively, because any of us can be innovative, whether you're a government agency or not.
It's more approachable.
Yeah.
People don't have to identify with a lifestyle.
Yeah. I took all these risks, made all these sacrifices, and I'm greedy.
Yeah. Yeah. But the innovation is like, oh, so we could do things better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Let's do that.
Everybody gets into that. Yeah. So that it was a lot more, let's call it politically correct. Which is not my strength being politically correct, I'm learning. So people that are out there talking about entrepreneurship so great, realize your audience may be hearing innovative thinking or entrepreneurial or creativity and things like that. That's really, you know, what entrepreneurship is all about.
Yeah. And it's interesting when I'm working with clients, one of the huge telltale metrics around are we having innovation happening internally is, do I feel like my opinions count? Is anybody listening if I bring up ideas? And am I safe enough and psychologically safe to bring up those ideas? And that's a really interesting one, because one of the things, a precursor to that, is if I get people in the wrong seat, they're not in the right job, they never feel safe bringing up ideas because they think they're going to be found out. Oh. They're in a numbers role, but they don't have a numbers brain. They're in a quality control role, but they're not anal by nature. So they're working every day to be something they're not. They don't ever want to be found out. So the ideas they have, they doubt, because I'm doing it wrong. I know I'm doing it wrong. I'm just trying to get by and collect a paycheck. But the people that are in the right seats, they are totally comfortable asking for help, knowing they're not an expert and going to find, cobble together these experts to keep going to the next level, because they know they can show up with shoes on and they're good.
Interesting. Well, you think about happiness, what drives happiness in our lives. And I've thought that, about that a lot as I've gotten older. And because right now I've kind of built a life where I kind of do whatever I want whenever I want. And so I'm always, you know, I guess I'm not saying that I ran over my son's dog yesterday and I felt horrible. I wasn't happy at that moment. But I'm generally a happy person. And, you know, I'm kind of doing my own thing. Not everything goes perfectly, but I'm kind of in the in my lane. And I'm happy. For those people that aren't in their lane, the lane that they should be, how do you be a happy person? It seems like it would be very difficult to be happy even.
It's really hard. Yeah. I think some people try to find it outside of work, even though they're not happy at work. And I think one of the huge elements about it is if we can even admit to ourselves, I think I'm doing the wrong thing. Because we've all had jobs we were not meant for. Mm-hmm. And when you feel that dissonance, that it just feels harder than it should be, the change is afoot in our economy. Go start looking for something else. Start volunteering in a place to hone the skills that maybe you could market later, and take some freaking ownership of it rather than be miserable. And that's some people I see that are really doing that, and some are tired and feeling miserable, but there's no path out of that except effort.
Yeah. One of the things I've I was thinking about the other day, what makes me happy? Obviously, I like being in my own lane, but when I am deciding to start something and I continue and I'm progressing, that little bit of progress is like very satisfying for me, even though I might still suck at it. It like, oh, I got better. And now I'm like, oh, it gives me just a touch of confidence. And really it gives me the happiness. So really, I think putting ourselves into something where we can do it, try hard enough, do it regularly enough where we actually show some progress. And then it's amazing what that progress feels like,
and
even
then
if
it
it's
starts
small.
To snowball. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, for sure. But so do get yourself into something that's, you know, fun, that you're maybe naturally could be good at, and just start trying, and then you're going to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that really brings me joy is challenging people to be better versions of themselves. And the word challenging is really important to me because I'm not that gentle of a person. I'm pretty, I can be pretty abrasive. I'm not a really good coach for everybody. I'm not for everybody.
Do they ever get assigned as a coach to somebody? Like, okay, I want you to come in and, okay, we got this person that, let's say they're just sort of unhappy person, and you know they don't want to hear challenge yourself to get better, right? Because like if my wife said that to me, I would be, you know, I would be hurt, and I would be, I don't know what I would do. I would cry, start crying. but I wouldn't want her to say that. And so I can imagine pushback coming, because not everybody wants to hear that.
Yeah, it's definitely not phrased that way.
Okay.
To be fair, it's usually like, hey, where are you at? Where do you want to be? How can I help you? How can I support you? And that support often looks like, hey, you said this. What are you gonna do about it? You got this. It's not scary. Go try it. And I think we don't do enough tough love in our economy anymore. I think there's a lot of nurturing and gentleness and not enough get off your ass and go try it. Don't be scared. And we have to show our kids, right?
Heck yeah. You should come coach football with me. We have to tell that to the, I coach this group of seventh graders, tackle football. And you know, I am one of the coaches that does not use foul language. I use foul language all the time, but not around seventh graders. Football coaching is it's, you know, we, I hear a lot of get off your ass and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of funny. You know,
it's such a back and forth, right? They need to know you've got their back. And the reason you're pushing is, do you actually care about them? And if they don't believe that, none of the tough love will ever work. But if you get to a place where you can challenge them, it's because you've earned some trust. And that, to me, I think is the most important part. I think I've got a swimmer on our swim team, and God love her, she missed an event at our championship meet 2 years ago. And her mom still talks about the impression it made on her when I just railed on her about all the people that spent all their whole summer creating this opportunity for her, for you to go and miss your event. Are you kidding me? And she was kind of deer in the headlights, and she's never missed an event again. She's like, she got it. And it needed to not come from a parent. From her parent. It needed to come from someone else objectively watching the situation and going, Aubrey, give me a break. We've worked all summer to get you here. Pay attention, sweetheart.
That's amazing. Well, how do you, because I would imagine men and women, but I think more of the moms out there that might be listening, because you sound like Wonder Woman. You're building businesses, selling them, starting new ones. Your school board, swim team, starting the swim program. You're building this business. You're juggling a lot. Now you're even driving here from Calusa to come on the, you know, the Mark Haney show. How do you do it all? And do you ever get burned out, or do you ever just like go, did I bite off more than I should chew?
All the time.
Oh, you do?
All the time, yeah. One of my biggest problems is I really like new ideas. And so I get these things started, but then I don't want to run with the ball anymore. And I really need to find more doers that I can hand the baton to. They can run with them. Because my fun is, so I'm an entrepreneur, right? It's the startup. So year seven in swim team is like, I'm looking around kind of desperately going, which of these parents is going to run fundraising next year? Which of these parents? So that, I got this great advice when I was in graduate school from someone who I pictured the same way. And I said, how do you do it all? And she said, I don't. I do one thing every day. I said, I'm going to be a really good mom today. I'm going to be a really good executive today. I'm going to be a great volunteer. And I was like, that's powerful. That I can take and own, because I think we all spread ourselves so thin. And that's really valuable. I think know your strengths, right? I know what I'm good at getting it started. Maybe I don't need to run with things long term, and so work on that. But I have to, I time block everything.
Oh, wow.
So whether it's lunches with my friends, school board, my husband and I, if it's not on each other's calendar, please don't expect us to be here, because we both run pretty fast.
So you're not as much of a multitasker as you are, like, put them in these little compartments and just win that part of the day or whatever.
I mean, by nature, I have shiny syndrome. And so I try to be a one thing person, but then I have, like, you know, I'm waiting for a client to get on a call. So I'm answering emails madly, and I'm kicking off things that I need responses on.
Any advice to other people about, like, because other people have, especially when you're talking to entrepreneurs, when you're helping an entrepreneur, chances are they've built a life that is, you know, they like to chase shiny objects too. And I think too, once you're successful, there's probably more there's more worthwhile opportunities that you got to say no to, for sure, because you got to sort of filter through and, you know, choose the ones that, I guess, tie to your pillars at some level. Any advice to people though, that are like, trying to, you know, I'm raising the kids, and, you know, what she's doing sounds cool, and how do I do?
I think a couple things that come to mind. One, I talk to my kids a lot about, I like working. I think a lot of times as parents, we feel this shame that we shouldn't be away from them more. So I have to go to work. I have to go travel. And telling them, mom gets to go do this thing. I get to go speak at a conference. I get to do these things. It can be cool. And when I'm home with you, it's really cool too.
Yeah.
But not making that a taking it on as a shameful thing, because I'm a way better mom because I work than I would be if I stayed home.
Yeah, and I think most working women are that way. I think that that's why they chose this this thing. So I love that. Don't take it on as a guilt thing. I love that. And that I would say
you
that to the guy
too, like too.
To the guys out there too, same thing. You know, whether you're a traveling salesman and or whatever, you're working conferences or managing, you know, a big territory. If it's a fun job for you, don't be ashamed don't be about it.
Yeah, and if it isn't a fun job for you, that's a different topic.
Yeah,
right. But like, there's so much kids can learn about work that we can teach them and mm-hmm. and help them be interested in. And another hack, I guess I've found is I found a girl on the swim team years ago who I was like, could I pay you to come to my house 2 days a week, get the laundry out of our rooms, do the laundry, fold the laundry, put the laundry away, do other assorted tasks, like a kind of a mother's mm-hmm. helper. Because that was just one task that wears me out. Anything to do with grocery shopping, cooking, laundry are just my kryptonite. Yes. I don't want to touch them. I still have to do some of the cooking. My husband's pretty good about it, and we just don't eat that much complicated meals.
Yeah.
But God, having someone who, it wasn't just like, do the chores. It was, she had a rhythm. She came even when I wasn't there, and she'd take mm-hmm. care of business. And it was not a very expensive way to buy back some of my time. That's a great book, by the way, Buy Back Your Time.
Okay. And it kind of shows you how to, the hacks of finding more time in your life.
Yeah, basically. And so it's like, what can we be outsourcing? I have an admin who takes care of all four of my email accounts and my calendar and a bunch of stuff. So even some of my entrepreneur friends joke that they don't know when they're hearing from Bobby or me, because sometimes she just responds as me.
Yeah. Wow, that's great.
And so it's like, I don't have to, if I am doing my emails all day, I don't have time to do my work. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really beneficial for me to just be like, what do I like doing? I like working with clients. I like solving people problems. I don't like responding to emails, changing calendar invites. It's super boring. So, and somebody else, that's a great growth opportunity. And I think that's as leaders, giving up some of the pieces you're not great at anyway, give someone else a chance to grow,
that makes sense.
Earn money and earn confidence.
Mm-hmm. So you can be more productive on something that's maybe more high value, because typically the client facing items or the building partnerships and things like that, these are can be really valuable to an organization, where a calendar invite is, it has a lot of value, but it's not necessarily the same opportunity as building a big relationship.
Yeah. Like I'm thinking about one, I just have been working with a board for a, they're not nonprofit and they're not for profit. It's kind of a weird space, but they were in a really tough spot and they were really struggling with their staff. There was no trust whatsoever. And when I was hired for the job, I said, I don't know if I can fix this. This sounds pretty rough, but I'm going to go in with an open mind and assume positive intent. We did a bunch of stakeholder interviews, and that kind of work is, it's amazing the place they're in. And it's only been, you know, 2 months down the road, but just getting in there and really understanding where is everybody coming from and what has been amiss that created all this lack of trust. That's the stuff. Those are the problems I want to solve. I don't want to respond to all my emails.
Yeah. Well, okay. So back to, I'm putting my, hat on where I want to get a little more education about the employees and, getting them to get themselves right on the bus. What else around that did I not really dive deep enough into that really is around, look, here's how you can get yourself from point A to point B if you're, more of a teammate versus the CEO.
Yeah. I think one of the things I love about my business is that it's HR technology. It's especially for the more technical people out there. They don't get people and they don't need to. There's some really good tools. Like one of my favorites is called Predictive Index. And it's a way for us to define what is our ideal candidate for any given role. And then as we evaluate candidates that come through the door, we have a really quick look at behaviorally and cognitively, does the shoe fit? And if it doesn't, I don't care how much resume fit there is,
mm-hmm.
I might be setting them up for failure and myself up for failure as our employer. So that's been a really powerful tool that I've added to my practice maybe 8 years ago. And then the other one I really like is our employee engagement module. So we're measuring employee engagement and giving a data-driven direction to every team on what should you go work on? Because we can work on 1,000 things,
mm-hmm.
but how do we narrow down what's getting in the way of performance? And often it's clear expectations. Sometimes it's resources. Sometimes it's just feeling appreciated that somebody notices you're doing good work. Mm-hmm. And so I like the tactical nature of those things because it's like, I see it, I get it. PI tells me exactly what to go do and how to ask questions of my employees. And I like the tacticals. Just tell mm-hmm. me what to do. Most managers I see are like, I'll do it. I don't see it. I'm not as empathetic as I want to be, or I'm busy. So most managers now are employees, are like working supervisors. It's not often that you see someone who's just a manager, a player. They're mostly player coaches rather than just coaches.
Okay, so what did I not ask you about? So you're obviously, you've developed a family that is to be admired. I mean, the way your parents and now you and your husband and your brother, and it just seems like it's a good working model. Fifth generation yeah. family? Okay, so what did I not dive into around building such a strong family with that kind of unity? Because to me, that unity has got a ton of value, but what could you add in terms of like how to develop that?
I think the best word I can use is acceptance. My husband exited the family business in November, and we were really worried how this was going to affect. I had a client in Houston who was talking about their son-in-law exited their business and they didn't speak for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this could go really bad. I don't know how everyone's going to take this. And my parents and my brother were so gracious about it. This total acceptance of, well, if this isn't what you want to do, by all means, please don't spend your life doing it. And accepting, you know, if you go back to the strengths mentality, accepting these quirkiness that is like the joke in the family farm, and it really comes from our office manager, is like, there's, if you've seen Madagascar, it's like,
yeah, I think, is that a Disney movie?
Yeah. Pixar, I think.
Pixar,
the lemurs,
right.
They're all spaz attacks. Yeah. That's my entire family. And then there's my husband, who's like an engineer, and he's dressed in the stormtrooper outfit, and he's marching with a whole group of stormtroopers in a row, and he's like this very structured German.
Interesting.
And so, but there's this appreciation that he's great at systems mm-hmm. and processes, and he tolerates us, God love him. And so just these different strengths at play, if we can take them from irritation, which like last night it came to a head because my brother took the boat out, which was parked at our house, to go out on the river. We're like, oh, we'd love to come join you. We're on our way. Well, we're getting packed up, and he calls and he says, the keys aren't in the boat. Oh. Well, my German engineer husband took them out of the boat, so no one stole the boat and the boat was useful to them. But he didn't remember to text the whole family to say, hey, boat keys are in my box mm-hmm. and, you know, on the counter.
Amazing. Well, I think I'm going to summarize what I took out of that was you be you, right?
For real.
Yourself. It's okay to be you, even if you're systematizing type of mind, or you're a little bit flighty, accept it.
Yeah. And just own it, right? Yeah. What's the Dr. Seuss quote? Something about being youer than you. Oh, I wish I had it on the top of my head,
know.
But Dr. Seuss has some really good.
Yeah. Managers. I'll have to chat GPT that. I'm using a little bit of AI myself these days.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question, and I'm going to, I'll ask two more questions. So what did I not ask you? I was thinking about life hacks and leadership and things like that. And there was a book that was recommended to me. It's kind of around time management, but it's more than that. It's different than that by somewhat some measures. And it's called Essentialism.
I was hoping that was the one you were going.
The pursuit
picture,
of yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it took me a while to stammer the words out. But Essentialism is a book about like cutting things out of, it's okay to cut things out of your life and say no. And
no,
it gives
you.
Guidance on that. And so that to me, that's a book that I've read a number of times or listened to on audio. And it's, it might mean that you appear to look a certain way to others, but if that's what you need to do for self-preservation or to grow, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite books is The Four Agreements.
Oh,
ever
yeah.
Listen to that one?
It's been a while, though.
It's an annual listen for me.
Okay.
And it's such a good grounding. And One of the four agreements is always do your best.
Okay.
Be impeccable with your word. Of course, I'm not going to remember all four of these on the spot. Impeccable with your word is an amazing one mm-hmm. in terms of confidence and competence. Mm-hmm. Don't take anything personally has been a really powerful one for me because of my strengths, mm-hmm. everything's personal to me. And my relationships are really important. If anything's off with one of my key relationships, I kind of spin a little bit. And it's been an amazingly freeing mantra for me mm-hmm. is it's never about you. We're all coming from our own lenses and our own bad days and triggers and all these things. It's like usually that interaction, it wasn't about you. And
I've really actually heard people within the last year say that the four agreements was on there. You're not the first person that's brought that book up to me. And I believe I read it a few years back, but you know, they could recite it, like they live by it, like they read it every year type thing too. So that, it must be a great book, even though maybe I didn't, you know, didn't resonate with me as much. I'm going to have to pull that one out again now. You know, sometimes we need like that downtime when you feel like growing.
Timing
as
is
a
everything. That's one of my mantras with my kids. Timing's everything.
It's like, if you read one of these self-help books when you're not feeling the mood, you know, it doesn't, I like to read that stuff like when I'm Cabo and I come back a little more energized sometimes. So, okay. So last question, I guess, is like, what else did I not ask you? I know you have a message. I don't know where you, I mean, I didn't really, I have notes on what I was going to talk to you about, but I don't even remember what they are. So what did I not ask you that's like important for us to get out in terms of messaging?
I think one of the things that everybody needs to hear is there just aren't enough doers in the world. There aren't enough people who take the courage to just try. And we need those in our small communities, in our communities at large. I mean, I think about politics, and there aren't enough good candidates mm-hmm. because it's a terrible job. But if we don't have doers who are willing to push the needle, who are willing to take a stand and say, this is what I think is important, that's, you know, I think about, I go to the gym and work in our community with people who have very different political views than I do. But when you work closely with people, you're like, oh, they have all these amazing redeeming qualities. Just because we don't agree on these things over here, they become more human. And mm-hmm. until you lean in and become a doer, volunteer for things and hold people up. And that's a great way to find our strengths without big risks at work, is to go volunteer and lean into some things. And there's this great quote by an entrepreneur in Texas that is, we all want to be valued members of a winning team on an inspiring mission. And that goes for both volunteer unpaid roles and paid roles, because if we're a valued member, it means we're contributing from a strengths-based place of a winning team. Even people who aren't competitive love to win. Mm-hmm. And on an inspiring mission, it means we're doing something that matters.
Yeah.
And that is really the guidepost for all of my work, is if we can find and create those conditions, we've done something really good.
I love it. Well, Melissa, thank you for sharing such, I guess, it's more than common sense wisdom. It's more like you say it in an inspiring way, things that make us want to be a doer, go out and, you know, change our lives for the better. So thanks for sharing that. Very inspirational. Hopefully somebody got something that they can put into action, even if it's, hey, what book to read? There's a lot of good nuggets in there. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you for having me. This is such a great platform.
Thank you very much. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.